It's the Larry Kudlow Show. Free market prosperity starts here. Now, here's Larry Kudlow.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. This is the Larry Kudlow Show, and you can live stream us across the country, around the world, and throughout the solar system. Just go to LarryKudlowShow.com. All right, Memorial Day weekend, gasoline prices across the country, AAA, $4.60. That is an American record. Diesel prices, $5.53. I think that's close to a record. Diesel prices are used by truckers, and truckers deliver over 70% of goods around this country. So there's been a lot of assertions made recently at Davos, and President Biden was in Japan lauding high gasoline prices. So it's time for my Steve Coonan fix. That's what it is. Steve Coonan is a former Obama Energy Department chief scientist. He's currently a professor at New York University, NYU. He was at Caltech for many, many years. He is the author of Unsettled, What Climate Science Tells Us, What It Doesn't, and Why It Matters. Mr. Steve Coonan, welcome back to the show.
Oh, great to be talking with you on this Memorial Day weekend, Larry.
Yes, thank you. So, Steve, there's a lot of things to cover. One of them is Joe Biden in Japan. He was asked about high gasoline prices, and he's now he's calling this an incredible transition. He's saying this incredible transition. He doesn't deny the high gasoline prices. I don't think it's particularly bothersome to him. I know it's a political issue, but you and I aren't here to talk politics. He says incredible transition. And then he said, God willing, when it's over, we'll be stronger and the world will be stronger. What he means by that is we will get to some kind of net zero carbon and we will no longer use fossil fuels. And my thought is, God willing, we'll still have an economy if we don't use fossil fuels. So I want you to weigh in, if you would, please, from all of your different work. How bad is the fossil fuel story? How bad is the climate story? How bad are, you know, individual men and women who may have contributed to global warming? But what does it all mean?
Boy, you know, it's really complicated, Larry. But let me start in on, first of all, gasoline or fuel more generally is the lifeblood of the economy. And the high prices that we're currently experiencing impose terrible burdens on most Americans. Some folks are, of course, well enough off that it's not such a big deal. But for the great majority of Americans, it raises not only their individual costs, but the cost of everything we buy. Now, is that, as the president says, ultimately a benefit? I think nobody ever does a cost-benefit analysis of decarbonization. And when you do that, or you try to do that, the answer is not so obvious. Yes, we will perhaps have a little bit less risk from climate, but it's a few percent of the GDP at the end of the century, whereas the costs and the disruption of making this kind of transition, not just for the U.S., the whole globe has got to do it, are significant. And it's not obvious which way it comes out, but either way, it's pretty small.
I mean, are we in an existential threat, an immediate existential threat mode from the use of carbon?
No, of course not. Of course not. The official reports don't say that at all. In fact, as I said, it's a few percent, according to them, of the GDP in 2100, equivalent to a couple years of growth. Mm. So anybody who uses the word existential either hasn't read the reports or is being disingenuous.
What, 2%, 2.5 degrees Celsius warmer by the end of the 21st century compared to the late 1800s? You wrote that in one of your op-ed pieces.
Yep.
What does that mean? I mean, why should I worry about that?
Well, the answer is, in the very long term, it might cause more melting of the ice sheets and hence a more rapid rise of the ocean than we might see otherwise. But when I say very long term, I'm talking about a couple centuries. We will see longer growing seasons. Some areas of the globe might become a little bit less comfortable to live in, but we adapt. And, you know, as I think I said to you once before, we've seen already 1.1 degrees of rise in the last century, and the globe has done more than just fine in terms of health, population, longevity, nutrition, and so on. So another 1 degree over a century, not going to make a big deal at all.
Yeah, that sort of brings me to what climate czar John Kerry talked about at Davos. And he went through all the alleged damages and catastrophes from hurricanes and, you know, other natural disasters. He had a whole spiel about this. So I went back and looked at what our friend Bjorn Lomborg has written. Lomborg says that all these hurricanes and natural disasters, that the loss of human lives from these hurricanes and disasters has fallen 99% over the last 100 years. Literally, between 1920 and 2020, 99% drop in human lives lost through these hurricanes and other disasters. So I say Mr. Kerry is exaggerating. How's that?
I think that's one way to say it. Another is that he's being disingenuous. You know, I've never met the Honorable Mr. Kerry. I assume he knows a lot about diplomacy. But I don't think he knows very much at all about climate or energy. And so he's got to read and he's got to listen to others. He might be very selective in what he's reading or listening. Maybe he's not even read the official reports. But when you do, I think they validate what Bjorn has written and I have written as well.
I mean, what can... All right, one more point. I had Scott Pruitt on the TV show this past week. He's former EPA commissioner. Now, one of the things that he talked about was when the U.S. government is measuring the environmental impact of things, you know, whether it's oil or gas or pipelines. I mean, they're talking about direct impact, Steve. They're talking about indirect impact. They're talking about cumulative impact. Pruitt says, what about technological advances? And he mentioned one that's very interesting, carbon capture and storage. And in general, the point is technology has made these carbon fuels, particularly natural gas, cleaner and cleaner, not dirtier and dirtier. And this is this information is not being modeled properly by the EPA or the Interior Department, or the Energy Department.
Yeah, I mean, the burning of any fossil fuel, but particularly natural gas, will produce carbon dioxide. We do have the technology to capture that carbon dioxide after the burning and make sure it doesn't get into the atmosphere. The problem is it's pretty expensive. We can work to develop technologies to make that less expensive, but it's still going to be more expensive always than just letting it go up into the air.
But if we have strong economic growth and we, you know, producing the resources, let's call it the financial resources, as well as the technology breakthroughs, then, you know, we stand a good chance of being able to apply these new inventions.
Yeah, and we can. And, of course, we need the research and demonstration to bring down the cost. And we could do it in the U.S. If there's enough political will and financial capital to do it. The problem with carbon in the atmosphere is it's got to be done over the whole globe to be effective. And remember, the U.S. is only 13% of emissions.
I want to talk about that in a minute. Let's take a quick break. We have Steve Koonin, who is now at NYU. He's former Obama's Energy Department Chief Scientist, Caltech before that. I wanted to talk exactly about how to bring the globe down. And what would a world look like without carbon-related fuel and power? I'm Larry Kudlow. This is the Larry Kudlow Show. We'll be right back.
Now, back to the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. We're talking to Steve Koonin, former Obama Energy Department chief scientist, currently professor at NYU. His book is Unsettled, What Climate Science Tells Us, What It Doesn't, and Why It Matters. Steve Koonin, the lead editorial in today's Wall Street Journal is America's Summer of Rolling Blackouts. Green energy policies are making the nation's electric power grid increasingly unstable. Now, look, here's my thought. If we keep taking down, if government policies keep thwarting the use of fossil fuels, in this case, it has a lot to do with natural gas, the substitutes, particularly wind turbines and storage, are not resilient, they're not dependable, and this is an example of jamming down an end to fossils. We don't have a replacement mechanism, and it will do great damage to the economy. That is my thought. Please tell me what's yours.
You know, I think you're right, Larry, and I've become increasingly worried over the last year that we're going much too fast without a real plan. You know, the energy system is so important, it's not to be messed with lightly. And there is no plan other than we got to get rid of fossil fuels and replace them with wind and solar. I mean, serious studies have shown you just can't do that and maintain the reliability and affordability of the grid. It's going to take many decades if you want to make an emissions-free grid that's also reliable and affordable. We don't need to rush it.
I mean, the other point is, let's take natural gas. If we were increasing our exports of natural gas, let's say to China, let's use China. Wouldn't that make, I mean, if China used natural gas instead of coal, that would be a big factor in bringing down global emissions. I could say the same about India, which is another big carbon emitter. Okay, substituting natural gas for coal would be a great policy to achieve even these so-called Paris Climate Accord goals, would it not?
Yes, absolutely. Natural gas emits only about half the carbon dioxide that coal does per unit energy produced, and so it's a wonderful thing. The problem is that while it's abundant in the U.S., fortunately, and we could produce a lot more, many other countries, particularly China, don't have, and I think India as well, don't have those resources at the scale needed. So they would, if you like, become dependent upon the U.S. For natural gas. I'm not so sure China would be happy about that.
Yeah, well, it'd be worth a shot. you're probably right. But, I mean, you've written just in general that, you know, these environmental models that are being used and the current the Biden administration is just very heavy now in these environmental impact statements, but they're using models. The models, I think, don't even capture the potential for future technology breakthroughs. But you've said just looking at the past, the models aren't any good.
Indeed. There's a guy named Bjorn Stevens who runs Germany's Institute for Meteorology. And he said recently, in fact, it's difficult and in many places impossible to scientifically advise societal efforts to adapt in the face of unavoidable warming. It's impossible to assess the extent to which a given degree of warming poses existential threats. There are other people who are saying the same thing. The models give us a fuzzy picture of what goes on globally, but they're practically worthless to talk about what happens in any particular place or region.
So if we acknowledge, I mean, we're not denying climate impact. If we acknowledge climate impact, Steve Koonin, over the next 50 years or the next 100 years, with respect to GDP, it's not that big a deal is what you're saying.
It's a few percent for 3 degrees of warming.
And so suppose I tell you that I could cut taxes or deregulate various business and commercial activities, which would release, you know, entrepreneurship and faster growth. Suppose I posit that. that could offset whatever climate change is going on.
Absolutely. And the IPCC says that. The UN reports say that there are many other factors, some of which you just listed, that are more important than climate change in determining economic growth. And so I would love to ask the Honorable Mr. Kerry, you know, the IPCC says that. Mr. Kerry, do you deny that?
Well, I'm going to call him right after the show.
Okay, that would be great. I'd love to hear the answer.
And talk to, I used to know him, but not so much in recent years. I mean, I don't have I just wrote a column about this. A fossil-free economy will be in a permanent recession. We are not ready for that kind of thing. It's the unknown. It's like, you know, in the Middle Ages, the earth was flat, and they would draw these maps, and then the map would end, and it would be, you know, the rest of the map would say, there be dragons, because no one knew what was the... I mean, that's kind of what this is like. There'll be dragons.
It is. It's uncharted territory, if you want to be literal about it.
Yeah.
I expect that we would, over a century, readjust to having a fossil-free economy, but there would be great inequities, because you got to worry about the 5 billion people who don't have enough energy.
Mm.
And it would be, we'd spend more for energy than we're doing currently.
And so my last question goes away from fossils. I want to go to nuclear. I want to go to nuclear power, which many, that is the ultimate renewable, nuclear power. Now, the advocates, you know, Ms. Kerry doesn't like nuclear power. The advocates, the hardliners on climate change don't like nuclear power. What about nuclear power? Shouldn't that be part of the mix?
Yeah. So again, as I may have told you before, I'm a nuclear physicist by training.
Yes.
So I have a great affinity for fission. But look, you've got a lot of people, including the EU, Stuart Brandt, the author of the Whole Earth Catalog, Michael Schellenberger, who have great environmental credentials, who have come to understand what many of us have long understood, and that is, if you want an emissions-free energy system, fission, nuclear power, has got to be an important part of the picture. It's a proven technology. It can be made, I believe, economic. The waste issues or spent fuel issues are manageable. The world will eventually decide it's got to do this if it wants to be emissions-free.
Would nuclear power be absolutely central, like the biggest part of an emissions-free world?
Well, we're going to need a mix. I think gas with carbon capture and storage big batteries, large storage, will also be part of it. But you've got to have that reliable source of electricity that you can turn on when the wind and solar are not generating, as can happen for weeks at a time. And I think the best way to do that is fission. And I believe the world will eventually come to realize that.
What is the biggest hang up right now? Is it just the psychology of some of the disasters or what?
Yeah, I think it's two or three things. One is that the current cost is very high. The big nuclear reactors are very expensive, largely because of the need to license them individually. If we can get to factory-produced small reactors, that need goes away.
Right.
We can bring down the cost.
Steve Koonin, I got to stop it. Steve Koonin, you are terrific. Actually, you got to come back on the TV show. We'll have this conversation and more. Thanks so much.